and my fellow Pennsylvanians.
This state's electoral votes are key to who wins the presidency, and both of the candidates know it.
We win Pennsylvania, we win the whole deal. You know that. Just like last time.
But states like Pennsylvania are going to be incredibly important.
The only thing left on the board is Pennsylvania. The president cannot get to the finish line without the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
One state all four candidates are visiting today is Pennsylvania. Its 20 electoral votes are highly coveted, and the Keystone State could end up being one of the determining factors in the race.
Jill's a Philly girl, but I'm a Scranton girl.
This week, the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, released data from candidates across the country. This gives a snapshot of how much candidates have raised and from whom. Now, I'd argue more importantly, it shows what the candidates are spending and how much they have in the bank. As a wise Pennsylvanian, Ben Franklin once said, a penny saved is a penny earned. So we're going to sit down with Kat McParland. She eats, sleeps, and breathes campaign fundraising. Looking forward to having her back on the show. Last summer, she gave us a great perspective. I'm looking forward to a similar conversation as we unpackage the landscape across the Pennsylvania congressional delegation.
Money, money, money. Must be funny.
Kat McParland, welcome back to my kitchen table.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be back.
I think it was last summer. Listeners can go and check, but I do recall it was one of the most listened to episodes of 2022.
No way.
Clearly, we are not the only campaign finance dorks. I'm recovering. You're very much in the weeds. But we're going to spend a while going all over the Commonwealth, having pored over the FEC reports that just recently came out. That's the Federal Election Commission. But before we do that, why don't you tell folks a little about your background?
Great. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear people are interested in the things that we like to geek out on. My name is Kat McParland. I am a finance and fundraising consultant here in the Commonwealth, and have worked for clients in kind of all over Philadelphia, the Collier Counties, Allegheny, and with a real focus on helping folks in down ballot races build their war chests.
But you had a position similar to a position I had for 8 years that was not down ballot. So tell folks, I mean, albeit that sounds probably like a, I don't know, two decades ago, the 2018 cycle, but tell folks a little about what you were doing at this point back then in 2017-18.
In 17-18, I was on the finance team for Bob Casey's reelection. And I also worked with, before that, Josh Shapiro on his AG race. And for a while there was the finance director for the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. So definitely cut my teeth on some larger opportunities there.
Okay. So in other words, listeners, we have a, we got a real expert on the line and, you know, look, for better or worse, it's the mother's milk of politics. And, it is it's a barometer. It's not the barometer, but it's a quantifiable measure, of where candidates stand. And certainly as Senator Casey awaits an opponent and other candidates in the congressional delegation await an opponent, their opponents or potential opponents are looking at these numbers. So why don't we start with Senator Casey, who had a blockbuster 6 months in the last 3 months, all while recovering, and thank God he is, from prostate cancer. Now, there was a lot of reporting about these numbers, but why don't we plunge a little bit deeper into them?
Absolutely. Yeah, Bob Casey has had a tremendous fundraising haul. He's now sitting on a cash on hand of $3.2 million, but brought in around $7 million. And he's really doubled down on his fundraising since 2018. That was a real focus when they were kicking up that reelection and building out that plan. And he handily won in 2018. So I think he realizes the importance for the top of the ticket in 2024, which he will be in state, to scare off challengers, but to also have that really strong war chest to support down ballot races. So I think with so much at stake in the House, Casey's really just wanting to make sure that his reelection is as smooth, or if not smoother, than in 2018.
By the way, as we're recording this, Pennsylvania, and we have many listeners in Washington, and to an extent, I suppose they're observing Harrisburg, but Pennsylvania is now back to a split. I don't know if we can call it a split majority. It's an even tie in the delegations of the House. And yeah, it's just a fascinating first 6 months. So the point is that with Senator Casey being at the top of the ticket, his largesse and his strong campaign war chest is going to benefit statehouse candidates all the way up. Remind listeners, if they need a reminder, as they get these incessant emails and even phone calls from candidates, what are the giving limits, the federal giving limits this cycle?
The federal giving limits are $3,300 for the primary, $3,300 for the general. That was just raised from last cycle. So we the good news for everyone, you can give even more money to the folks emailing and texting you.
Well, I'm not going to comment on inflation, but it's not really tied to inflation. But yeah, $6,600 if you want to part ways to any of the candidates that we're going to be discussing. Kat, so I don't want to shortchange the incredible work that Team Casey's done and will continue to do as they await an opponent. But how does that trend? You know, it's interesting when you look at some of these other Senate races, and obviously folks are quite concerned about control of the Senate. But when we look to Senator Brown and elsewhere on the Senate map?
Yeah, I think that, well, and we're lucky here in Pennsylvania that we're now represented by two Democrats, John Fetterman obviously winning recently. Senate races, I think, are going to take potentially a backseat to the congressional races this year because Democrats need to gain that net 5 seats in order to gain control of the House. I think the Senate obviously will always be top of mind for folks. We definitely want to control both chambers if we can as Democrats. But it will be interesting to see if congressional races hinder or help Senate races in those target states like Ohio.
Yeah, you know, and I'm just coming back from 2 days in Michigan. It was unrelated to anything political out there, but Congresswoman Slotkin had an incredible quarter for a first-time Senate candidate, but certainly just knows what a tough race is in her very purple district. And that's just another example. There's no Republican opponent who's yet declared, similarly with Senator Baldwin in Wisconsin. And it's just remarkable. And when I came on board Senator Casey's very nascent operation, it was February 2005, if memory serves me. So comparably, it's a much shorter runway as folks are beginning much more expensive campaigns. Where shall we take this? You want to start in the West and move East, or start in the East and move West?
Let's do West and move East.
Okay. So we have two freshman members, quite different, both in the districts they represent, and then even their voting behavior. So Chris DeLucio and Summer Lee, which one should we analyze first?
Let's start with Summer, Congresswoman Lee. So obviously just recently elected, Summer Lee is really thought of as a rising star, I think, in a lot of circles, representing too kind of a shift in political power out in the western part of the state. In Q2, she brought in just under 90,000 and has just over 100,000 cash on hand. Obviously, she just conducted a huge campaign. At the same time, I think because her politics can potentially be seen as divisive, especially as a freshman congresswoman, I think she's really going to want to step up that cash on hand, especially if she is, you know, running in the circles of AOC, who constantly has a fundraising apparatus going, powered by small dollars, but something that I think would behoove Summer Lee as she, starts her career here in the U.S. Congress.
This is just to remind listeners who might not be from Western PA or even outside of PA. This is a seat which is largely centered in Pittsburgh, but goes also into the adjacent Westmoreland County. The longtime Congressman Mike Doyle, obviously the lines changed, but this is a lot of that territory. It was a bitterly contested primary. She won just by the narrowest of margins. But as we're recording this, we see that she voted in a vote that was 412-9, an incredibly bipartisan vote to condemn anti-Semitism. She was one of the nine. So she has taken some pretty out there positions. I didn't realize that her fundraising was really that anemic, but well, let's move up into the North Hills with Chris DeLucio. So this is by no means nearly as deeply blue.
Right. This is definitely more of a purple district. Obviously, he hasn't been in long. He was inaugurated in January. So just the first few months of his time out there, inheriting a district once belonging to Connor Lamb. DeLucio is an interesting case study right now when you look at, and we'll speak more to this later, but you look at the three folks that the DCCC is really targeting in Pennsylvania to fund: Wild, Cartwright, and DeLuzio. DeLuzio, while he is behind on fundraising compared to the other two, for example, his what he raised in Q2 is $362,000, and he has $368,000 cash on hand. So he's struggling a bit with fundraising, lagging behind, which isn't surprising given his campaign operation is still relatively new. But he is in a district that is going to be identified as vulnerable by the NRCC and other Republicans. So as you mentioned at the start of the recording, you know, by no means is fundraising the be-all end-all, but it is a signifier of the viability, the longevity that a candidate could potentially have to keep a seat. So it will be interesting to see if he is able to beef up those fundraising numbers and hopefully be competitive in a NRCC targeted district.
And that's going to be ground zero for the presidential campaign. And you have Arvin Venkat, a freshman member of the State House, who flipped the seat. I mean, there's other State House seats out there. So there's going to be a lot of ground operations. And certainly the Pittsburgh airwaves are going to be a mess. If I was up there, I wouldn't want to turn on my television for a good chunk of next year.
First Allegheny County.
why don't we, as we move eastward, and I don't want to gloss over incredibly safe incumbents like Guy Reschenthaler and Mike Kelly and John Joyce, but G.T. Thompson is the only chairman in the delegation. The Ag Committee is obviously quite busy with the Farm Bill this calendar year. So tell listeners a little about Chairman Thompson's, and this is a huge chunk of territory, very rural district, but agriculture has obviously many, many corporate ties in Washington, D.C., and a lot of people knocking on his door. So what do his reports look like?
Chairman Thompson had a great quarter. I think this is in trend with kind of a national view that there are Republicans who are in leadership who are having really successful fundraising quarters compared to the past. So Thompson raised in Q2 $571,000. So over $500,000 for someone who's at the level that Thompson is I think a good haul. And he has just over $750,000 cash on hand. So he's sitting very well. I think sometimes we even expect to see Republicans not be raising as heavily as Democrats are in these first couple quarters of the year. But yeah, Thompson has had a nice little haul. And, you know, obviously his district still heavily leans Republican. I don't see it as, you know, being up in the air. I think this is one that Republicans love. It's an incumbent who's strong, and now he has a war chest to back it up.
So, and with all that in mind, because it is deep, deep red, has he made contributions to the NRCC?
He has not made any contributions to the NRCC.
Pisk, Mr. Chairman.
I wonder if we'll start getting some solicitations now that the numbers are out. I might be getting a call from the NRCC pretty soon.
Well, I have heard through the rumor mill that we have a sizable number of NRCC opposition researchers that listen to this show. I also know that we have multiple members of the congressional delegation and their senior staff who listen to this show. Chairman Thompson, I don't know if you're one of them, but anyhow, let's keep on moving east. Let's stay up there on the I-80 corridor to really the center of the world as we head into 2024. Scranton, Pennsylvania, represented by Mr. Matt Cartwright.
Matt Cartwright. Yeah, he's had a great quarter as well. He brought in just over $500,000, so $523,000, and is now sitting on $844,000 cash on hand, which is very strong after this past quarter. I think...
So Matt Cartwright has a higher cash on hand number than the sitting chairman of the Ag Committee going into a farm bill markup. Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, we knew he was a dynamo. Well, my hat goes off to Matt and his whole team. Okay. So yeah, sorry to cut you off.
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, folks are taking early fundraising very seriously. And by early, I think, you know, coming off of such a divisive national landscape, I think it can be hard for some folks to remain motivated to reach out to their own donors. But it seems like Matt Cartwright and his team have really done a great job of not only raising, but banking that money. So I think that's going to be very helpful to him as he approaches election.
And I imagine whoever is conspiring to run against him in a district that is as purple as can be, that's going to be ground zero being Joe Biden's hometown, is looking at these numbers. And I didn't realize that. And let's be honest, it's not the most affluent pockets of the Commonwealth when we look at Northeast PA. So Matt's certainly putting in, he's turning over every stone, and early money is like yeast, as they say. Let's move down the Northeast Extension to the Lehigh Valley. I'm obviously very partial to there. It'll always be home. So Congresswoman Susan Wild, equally purple district, if not even more purple, but really a razor thin victory that she had. Tell folks a little about what her situation is.
Susan Wild has, and she's got to be used to having to constantly fundraise, and is no stranger to the fact that her area is vulnerable for folks who might be interested in challenging her. So she's had a strong haul as well. She's raised $600,000 around there this past quarter and is holding on to $827,000 cash on hand. Scaring off, I think, any future potential primary opponents, but also she's going to be running a campaign where I think the Republicans are going to have a lot of candidates to choose from, dividing that money amongst all of them, which only suits to benefit Susan Wild. I think she'll also be getting a lot of support by the DTRIP's frontline PAC, again, targeting those areas where Joe Biden did not win in 2020 and making sure that those incumbents hold on to what they have. So I think we're going to see only more impressive numbers come out of the Wild campaign. And again, their war chest is growing. So it'll be interesting to see where they put their resources.
Well, it's incredibly important because she, for better or worse, has to advertise in the Philadelphia media market. So voters in Delaware and South Jersey and more than an hour south of her district are going to get very familiar with the dynamics of this campaign. What struck me, and I think it's just what we hear anecdotally, is that she's obviously held in high regard by her colleagues, many, many female members of Congress and safer seats from across the country. Each contributed $1,000 or more from their campaigns. My recollection is she took, and I believe she's still stuck with, the no corporate PAC pledge. So a number like that's even more impressive. Was that your analysis?
Absolutely. Yes, Susan Wild took that no corporate PAC pledge, which, has scared off other Democrats from agreeing to. But I do think because she's had to fundraise more from individuals and really expand her network, prospect some folks that maybe hadn't supported a race in her district before, I think that makes the number even more impressive.
Yeah, one of the contributions that stood out to me was from Hula PAC, which I assumed was related to Chrissy Houlihan, the congresswoman to the south in Chester County. And indeed, Chrissy Houlihan, I did not know, launched a leadership PAC and it looks like gave out $112,000, $1,000 of which to Congresswoman Wild's campaign. But just remind listeners what a leadership PAC is in addition to a campaign committee.
Sure. A leadership PAC is a separate entity than a candidate's own war chest, own account, and they can raise into that leadership PAC to benefit other folks running for office, down ballot races, anything that could potentially bolster the either causes or candidates that a sitting elected would want to support.
Yeah, to paraphrase Kat, it's essentially double dipping. You can go back to donors and say, hey, here's door number two.
You said it, not me.
Well, nowadays I'm on the receiving end of these calls. So as we wind down, I don't want to shortchange other members of the delegation. Let's stay in Southeast PA. We'll save the best for last. Mr. Chairman of the Freedom Caucus, Scott Perry, we'll save him for last. But you certainly don't want to gloss over relatively safe seats with Ms. Scanlon and Ms. Dean. But let's go to the city of Philadelphia, which saw a bruising, incredibly expensive mayoral race. Obviously, there's a lot of political factions there. And Congressman Boyle, Congressman Evans, they're familiar with primary challenges, and that's probably always in their rear view. Mirror concerned about that. So let's talk about the two of them.
Absolutely. Brendan Boyle has had a really successful fundraising program for the past few years. His cash on hand is sitting at around $2.7 million. And while I think his...
$2.7 million. I'm not good at math, but once again, Chairman G.T. Thompson of the Ag Committee, that is multiple. Okay. All right.
Just lighting some fires under the other members of the Ag Committee. Brendan, I think, has always done a great job of making sure that he's scaring off some potential primary contenders. It is a really attractive district with Montco, with parts of Philadelphia in there. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point the congressman is primaried again. But as of right now, the fundraising numbers, I would not encourage anyone to run against Brendan Boyle.
And next door with Congressman Evans, a member of the Ways and Means Committee, arguably the cream of the crop committee in Congress. So I believe this is like the bluest, highest Democratic performing seat in the nation. But what's the lay of the land there for his finances?
So Congressman Evans, he's only sitting on about $196,000 cash on hand.
Oh my gosh, that is a crazy juxtaposition with his neighbor,
exactly.
Mr. Boyle.
Okay, it's a marked difference. The thing is, too, though, with Congressman Evans, he is so beloved, he's so revered politically that so while his cash on hand is low, I think his political capital is always going to be something that carries him through. And, you know, I don't see anyone potentially challenging the congressman. I think there's always talk, especially with this past election, the mayoral election in Philadelphia, there's always some talk around, well, if you don't win mayor, maybe you could go for the congressional seat if Dwight wants to step away. So it's always interesting politically, that seat. But while the cash is low and while I would encourage the congressman to fundraise a bit more, I do think that he'll be sitting tight there.
I imagine most listeners know, but never want to assume. So Ways and Means, one of the original committees of the Congress, it's pretty much touches each of our lives. It's tax policy, trade policy. So more or less every employer in Pennsylvania and nationally has a stake in this, and they certainly monitor what all the members of the committee are doing and what fundraisers are happening. Okay, let's go up the Delaware River. So Congressman Fitzpatrick is in one of these rare seats in the country that's held by a Republican, but is consistently won by Democratic presidential candidates. And is certainly a great family name, and he's got an independent streak to a degree in his caucus. But what's the lay of the land up there?
Brian Fitzpatrick, again, an example of a Republican who's really stepped up a fundraising program. So this past, he's sitting on a war chest of $1.9 million. That he's sitting on a war chest, cash on hand of $1.9 million. This past quarter, he brought in around $679,000. So he's really having a strong fundraising year. And I think a perfect example of an incumbent that the NRCC absolutely loves.
No, I mean, my hat goes off to him and his team. Once again, we're talking about very large sums of money in increments of $6,600. So that's many multiples of that. Okay, so we saved the best for last. Congressman Scott Perry, the other chairman in the delegation of the House Freedom Caucus, which... Well, listeners, you're listening to a political podcast. So if you don't know what the House Freedom Caucus is, then I don't know why you're listening to us. But Speaker McCarthy certainly knows about them. So Scott Perry is from a much more purple district than many of his fellow Freedom Caucus members. So what are his finances looking like?
So Scott Perry brought in Q2 $414,000 and is now sitting on a cash on hand of around $540,000. So a very decent pull. I know there are a few folks who have announced that they will challenge him, but I don't think either have particularly notable fundraising programs yet. And the district remains, you know, leaning Republican. So I think Scott Perry should feel pretty secure right now.
Well, we covered a lot of ground, literally hundreds of miles and tens of millions of dollars. But Kat, what are you going to be looking for in Q3 and Q4 for what I'm just afraid to say is probably going to be the most expensive election whirlwind in Pennsylvania history?
I'm definitely looking to see if Chris DeLuzio can raise some more money and really keep that seat there. I'm excited to see how things play out with Susan Wild and Matt Cartwright, if they can continue, you know, the ground that they've laid. I think that they've done a very good job. So I'm hoping that we can still see some great numbers coming from them. And I think the Casey team, which I think I was actually misspoken on before, I said that they had 3.2 million cash on hand. And I think that was from Q1. Their Q2 cash on hand is 5.9 million. So even stronger than what I stated previously, I think Bob Casey is going to continue to just knock it out of the park. I think they're really going to double down on their fundraising. And while folks might think that giving to him might not be the best use of their money, since it looks like it's a pretty safe seat, if I know anything about Bob Casey, it's that he wants to support everyone he can down ballot in the party. And I think he's going to use his war chest to do just that.
Oh, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is also sending checks to colleagues like Sherrod Brown and Tammy Baldwin. And he's a great team player in the caucus. One last question. I mean, any sense of Team Fetterman? I mean, a really incredible fundraising juggernaut over the last year. I'm sure many listeners were on the receiving end of that outreach and might have opened up their checkbooks. But any sense of what, obviously he doesn't have to spend a lot of time fundraising, is got 5+ years to think about this, but
absolutely. Yeah. John Fetterman sitting on a cash on hand of just over $1 million.
Really?
So his fundraising apparatus, as we've seen throughout his Senate campaign, it's really continuing into the off years for him. So I think that as we track Senator Fetterman's career going forward, to see what nods and cues he takes from Casey in sort of becoming a larger team player, not just in the state, but in the party as a whole. So I'm excited more to see Fetterman's expenditures going forward, because I think we can always expect really strong fundraising numbers. So seeing what he does with that money, I think, is going to also really help define the type of senator that we can expect him to be.
Well, you heard it here first in July of 2023, but I could see a John Fetterman DSEC chairmanship at some point in the future. That I don't know if that's been said. Maybe I'm just pulling that out of nowhere, but it would be unorthodox and it would be historic, I think. So, Kat, our conversation was not unorthodox, but it was certainly, I found it very insightful. So thank you again for your time and for the work you're doing in the trenches for the candidates that you help.
Thanks so much. It's always so great to be a part of this.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Pennsylvania Kitchen Table Politics. Take a minute and leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform. Please also consider following us on social media for updates and announcements regarding future episodes and new guests. You're political, so I am sure that you're on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. We are too, at PA Political Podcast. Visit our website, papoliticalpodcast.org, and send us your feedback about this episode and suggestions on future guests. Until next week.